Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. It will be without cheese for my next guest because he does not eat cheese. He has been our defending champion. And, there's been some Jeffrey Mayer coming up here lately, like in my news feeds. And then it was a part of my documentary. This guy was a part of my documentary. He was my one-time Oriole insider. He was inside enough to get thrown out along with the rest of us. Alan McCallum now does things in Washington, D.C. He's upscale these days, but he is still loving him some Orioles baseball. We don't get together nearly often enough, whether it's at games. Hey, Curio offered me those tickets. If I get the tickets, you're on speed dial, Alan. I mean, to take to a game here. And I do know that you've made time to make sure your Mass and subscription works wherever your digital device might be. This is the year we've all been waiting for, right? Like, I've known you 28 years, 29 years, 29 years, I think you and I've known each other. This is
1995, yeah.
the year we've been waiting for, right? This is the baseball team. You and I, for 29 years of bitching, moaning, complaining, walking in, walking out, throwing up, throwing down, fighting back and forth about this franchise. This is where it's at right now, right? Like, this is as good as it gets, dude. You and I could do this every day, right?
Well, first off, while I work every day in Washington, D.C., I still reside right here in Baltimore County. So I'm living the dream here in Baltimore. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people would say last year 101 wins is pretty good. These last couple of seasons have been amazing, and the Orioles are on track for that again in 24. So I would say that this is the window that we've been waiting for since we've known each other. Probably for the next 4 or 5 years at least, this Orioles team is gonna look to contend and be among the elite, not just in the American League, but in baseball in general.
Well, because I'm on double secret probation and under further review for my press credentials, I'm not going to talk about the ownership, but like the ownership sits at the forefront of all of this because Luke and I are talking about, are they going to package Kerstad and Mateo with some two prospects further down the farm to try to go get a starter, a reliever, two relievers? They have too many outfielders. So all of these issues sort of bake into the cake of, does Rubenstein really own the team yet? Why are John Angelos's people still running the whole place? Where's my press credential? All of the basic questions when you and I get together every month, but it's been very few and far between. You and I could get together and talk about the kind of prosperity we're talking about. And I don't even know where to begin with you because Luke and I go at it sometimes 3 times a day, doing segments on pitching, hitting, specific players. I feel like we've praised all of them at various points. Today's flavor is Kyle Stowers, who wasn't even on the team. Holiday's been, thrown out. Kramer's got problems. Means we don't know. Bradish is throwing no hitters. Like, it's quite the soap opera in so many ways, but where do you come in at 50,000 feet as my tenured Oriole reporter, known you twice as long as I've known Luke, quite frankly, and watching all of this, what do you make of all of it? And if you were talking about it all day, what would you be talking about?
Well, look, there's a ton there. Yeah, there are a ton of places to start. The first one is that, there's so much angst about the young guys versus the veterans and getting them playing time. Kerstad came up, didn't play. It took Couser like 2.5 weeks to get a chance to play. All the other guys down on the farm. It seems to me that, it feels a little schizophrenic, but it feels like this happened maybe a year earlier than the organization expected. Winning 100 games, putting them immediately on the map to be the franchise contender. The way this sets up, it feels like they were expecting right about now to start to hit the first stride to be seen as a contender. So that as you go into the offseason and you've got Santander and Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins, all sort of right at either free agency or the highest point in arbitration where you can move them and bring guys in, that would happen, and the transition would be more natural. But what you have is a team that won 101 games probably a year earlier than they expected. You have young guys on the farm who have blossomed in a dramatic rate of time, and your veterans who have struggled in the outfield who have struggled in a way that they probably wouldn't have expected. And there's another piece in this. Ryan O'Hearn, who really I think is a big piece in all of this, just sort of fell into their lap. Obviously, they went and got him, but has become a much more important player on this team than I think anybody could have expected. And as much as you talk about Kerstad and they don't want to play him in the outfield or anywhere in the field because they don't think he can field, well, the DH spot is exactly where he fits, with the other guys sort of taking the baton as you have the veterans moving on either through free agency or trade or what have you. And they've been caught in this spot where everyone wants them to go for winning the World Series right now. And Mike Elias was expecting to be moving into contention and making some of those decisions. So I think that they blossomed probably a year earlier than they expected. And it's put a lot of pressure on how to get some of these things done. And it's certainly frustrating for the fans, frustrating for the media as they try to decipher what's going on, frustrating for Mike Elias, because I think he's, you know, it's hard to completely transfer the starting lineup into the hands of rookies and say, oh, we're trying to win the World Series this year, because teams that win the World Series generally have a really nice mix of veterans and youth to blend. Probably the most interesting thing I've ever heard said was that when teams win the World Series, you have veterans playing like rookies and rookies who come up and play like veterans, so that you get this great blend of energy, wisdom, youth and vitality, and drive to win. And the Orioles are trying to figure out what that mix is right now. Obviously, they've had some pitching circumstances that are problematic. I guess it's hard to expect John Means to be healthy. It's such a shame. I feel for him all the time. You think about the kind of talent he has. And I'm not saying he's Cy Young caliber, but he's certainly in the top of the rotation caliber type pitcher, and just can't stay healthy. So it's hard to count on him, but he's certainly a player that they would have liked to have had in the rotation going forward. And after Tommy John surgery, you would hope that was the case. Obviously they've gotten really lucky with Bradish and the injury that he's come back from. So now Burns, Rodriguez, and Bradish are the anchors, which you were hoping they would be. And now you're trying to figure out the back end. Cole Irvin's been amazing. And while Suarez has been better than anyone could have expected, I would like to see them bring up Cade Povich and see what he can do. Again, as a blend to give some of these young guys a chance. You've got to remember if the intention is to bring up so many of these young guys at some point, when you try to sign them later on or extend them, the thought might be, hey, you've retarded my major league ascension for an extended period of time. Why should I give you hometown discounts? I mean, there are other parts of this equation that everyone's trying to figure out. But they have an opportunity to advance a guy who's done nothing but succeed, at least for the last little while here, in Cade Povich. And it makes sense to me to put Suarez back in the bullpen and give him a shot and see what he can do.
It's fascinating. This time last year, Stowers was getting blocked by Santander and Mullins and Hayes. And, you know, if all those guys were hitting at whatever pace, I wonder then what happens to Couser and then Stowers, and if Holiday had come up and hit, because there's really a chance all of them could be all firing at some level, and nobody's walking. And Luke and I haven't talked about that, but on base percentage and where the Yankees are as far as walks ahead of them, not to mention power and the Yankees being a very formidable version of the Yankees here thus far at the 1/3 pole, but the outfield and the blocks and the amount of talent and the money and the arbitration, to your point, that's a great point that it came a little earlier than their timeline would have had it with those players. But it's fascinating that Mullins and Hayes have not been able to hack the heat here of this and having the footsteps. And they were, you know, track-ready guys. There were guys that struggled. Mullins struggled famously before he sort of found it. I know they both have had health issues as well over the last year. Mullins most of the last year, Hayes too, and breaking down. But this is a weird transitional time. And, you know, I go back 40 years ago to DeSensei's coming in for Brooks Robinson and, you know, Don Baylor and you know, and those guys coming in for Buford. And, you know, there was a transition from glory team players, including my cousin, to Belanger, right? Like all of that went on during that period of time. This team hadn't won anything. And it felt like the Hayes and Mullins guys, much like it probably felt like Mancini this time 2 years ago, they were going to be here when, as Buck would say, a pile diver in all of this. I don't know who the pile divers are, and I don't know who they're going to deal out of the organization. You know, Ortiz was blocked. That was never really going to happen. So that sort of made sense. But it feels like they have the kind of depth where we're going to wake up to a WNST text and they're going to deal something for something, because it feels like Elias will be willing to do that with the depth, wanting to do that, believing that pitching's going to be a really key component to winning games in October. And also ownership, and this is where I will bring Mr. Rubenstein in, the Ruben Splash, whatever, it's going to be a checkbook issue to say, will we take on salary in August in a way that we haven't? And I guess they will. I mean, I am assuming all of the positive things that some 74-year-old billionaire is going to want to win and win now, especially when if he knows anything about baseball, and there's still some questions of how much he knows about baseball, but this is rarefied air in the 29 years of our relationship to be saying, how do we win a World Series this year? Not how do we compete, not how do we beat the Yankees in the American League East or whatever. How do you build this club to be able to win short series, defense, running the bases, little things, one-run games in October that they're going to need to do that they weren't real good at last October, and whether they learned from that or not. But assembling this roster is something, because it's not cut and paste at all.
It really is. Look, there's a lot there. You said you were talking about pile divers. I think this club has a lot of pile divers. They're so athletic, and they play the game hard. You watch guys run the bases. They're one of the best base running teams in baseball.
My point is, who's going to be on the team when they're diving on the right pile? Because sure, they're going to trade guys, to your point, that they feel like Austin Hayes is they don't think he's not a winner or whatever. There's three spots in the outfield, and he's not the best one right now. He's the fourth, and that's still up for bid.
So let's be realistic. I mean, if you're Mike Elias and you're going to your owner and saying, we really need you to commit to Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, the young guys, it's hard to look at an Austin Hayes, and I hate to say it, but a Cedric Mullins, and say, commit to them when you've got all this young talent that doesn't cost anything right now, and who you project to be better in theory than they are, or at least have longer track records. So if you're going to recommend anything to your now owner, it seems to me that it would be, commit to the young guys so that we can build on this and save on the front end, knowing that they're going to get more expensive as they go on.
And so knowing that one Rutschman or one Henderson's going to cost you five of the rest of these guys.
Sure. I mean, and Santander, in my opinion, is a little bit different than Mullins and Hayes. Because he's a switch hitter, because he's a real power bat, given that so many of these young guys are left-handed, I know that the Orioles right now have some of the best numbers in terms against left-handed pitching in baseball. But if realistically these guys are all going to come up, if it's Jackson, let's say they trade Mountcastle. In my mind, it looks like the infield at some point is going to be Westberg at third, Henderson at short, Holiday at second, and Mayo ultimately playing first base, which means you're moving off Mountcastle.
We've been moving off of him for 3 years, and all he does is hit the ball. Right? I mean, and he gets hot at times.
He's incredibly streaky, and when he's on a streak, you can't get him out. And then there are other moments when it looks like he's a little lost. He had issues last year as well from a health standpoint. So there are a lot of things to consider about him. But if you're going to commit from a financial standpoint and build a plan for a team that, while they have a new billionaire owner, is still, from a market standpoint, going to be limited in terms of what kind of revenue they can bring in on a regular basis. So you have to run your business intelligently. That seems to me to be the plan that you would promote. So you're talking about finding a way to move off of these guys. Even Ryan O'Hearn, I mean, if you're going to commit to the young guys, how long is his shelf life? I don't know. In terms of winning the World Series right now, look, if they find that they need another top rotation pitcher, then yeah, they're probably going to have to move some of the top tier talent. If they need relievers, you can get relievers of decent quality without moving your top tier prospects.
Should have no problem getting relief pitching then in the end, right? Because like they're going to have a surplus of a surplus here to some degree.
You would think. So it's all about, is it a rebuilding team like Oakland that's going to look for your best top prospects, or is it going to be a team, for example, like the New York Mets, that may be jettisoning payroll as well as trying to make spots for some guys that they're going to take a chance on? So, I mean, a lot of it's who your trade partner is, what time of the year it is, and what they think you can get. The tricky part with the new system in terms of the wild card is that a lot of teams think that they'll have a chance to get in and that are basically playing 500 ball right now or maybe below and won't move off some of their guys. So that it's a tougher piece to figure out than it was 10 years ago when the circumstances were different. Look, you mentioned the Orioles not walking, and it does sort of feel like the Baltimore Orioles are cursed, right? No matter what club they have, these guys never walk. Whether it was the slugging Orioles of the late 90s that were all about the home run. Mike Elias and Sigmundsson go up through all of this to bring in guys who have high on-base percentages that are part of the new era of approach to baseball. You think they're going to walk, 150 times a year at minimum, and you still end up in the bottom of the league. I can't quite figure that out. Even with the new dimensions, you would think, hey, yeah, center field, right field are still pretty attainable, but with left field, you want to work the count. You want to be able to use the space in that area to drive the ball the opposite field. Obviously, some of them can, but you would think that it would impact how they approach their at bats. And this club does still look like they look to hit the home run. So I don't know if it's an Oriole curse, whatever it is. It's fascinating. It's certainly they're at the bottom of the league. Certainly not approaching what the Yankees are doing in terms of getting on base. That said, as good as the Yankees are right now, Juan Soto has obviously been everything that they would have hoped him to be. It's still hard to imagine, with the age on that club, them staying healthy enough to keep at this pace. I could be wrong. They could run away. We'll see. But the question ultimately is, as much as you want to win the division, are you sure you want to win the division? Because if you look at how things have borne out the last few years, the teams with the best records that get the bye have not done particularly well. So, it certainly looks like the Orioles are ticketed for the postseason. So the question is it better for them to win the division, probably have one of the best records in the American League, and sit it out for that first week, or to have them go in as a wild card team and be hot? I mean, the Arizona Diamondbacks were only a couple games over 500, and they ended up in the World Series last year. How did they do that? They had a lot of young guys, they had talent, but they also got hot.
And the Rangers dredged up a 30-something-year-old pitcher that nobody wanted, who turned out to be like a real spark plug for them, and finished off the Orioles, quite frankly.
And they had a slugging offense that they had all year. Yeah, they went cold every now and then, but they put together a veteran-laden team built for the postseason, and they brought in a young guy who got crazy hot for 6 weeks and helped them win the World Series, who's, you know, struggling to get off the schneid here in 24 when they expected him to be a Rookie of the Year candidate. So, it, you know, things have to align. I don't know what the best formula for the Orioles is to win the World Series. Frankly, I don't know there is a formula anymore, except to get in and see what happens. Obviously, you want to have an elite bullpen. You want to catch the ball. The Orioles can certainly catch the ball. They probably could use a couple of extra pieces, like a lockdown closer, as we get deeper into the season, to help with the bullpen. But from a starting rotation standpoint, I mean, if you go into the postseason with Burns and Rodriguez and Bradish as they are, with the experience for the young guys of having gone into the postseason last year, I don't know how you could ask for any more. You certainly hope the lineup gets a little more patient as they get further into the season and find their ability to work counts and walk a little more. That will certainly help in the postseason, because what they seem to have been doing right now, for the most part, is sort of holding out against good pitchers, going point for point with their starters, and then waiting for the soft underbelly of teams' bullpens and beating them up. And it works because there are a lot of soft underbellies.
Well, I mean, the Red Sox, when they were sluggers, they made a living doing that. That was the way they did it.
The other piece is that the Orioles also seem to play well against the American League East. They seem to play and hit better against teams and pitching staffs that they are more familiar with. So you certainly can't argue with going well against your division. But I don't know that there's a formula anymore, because – it really is the wild, wild west now, more than ever in baseball when you get into the postseason.
Alan McCallum is our guest. He has been our baseball friend and analyst here for three decades, and he's also featured in our 25th anniversary documentary. I don't know if you've seen the doc yet, Alan, but it's brought back a lot of, you know, memories, and Jeffrey Mayer's in there, and you know, where we were. And, you know, to have a Corbin Burns, to have a number one, to feel like you have an emerging guy in Rodriguez, that I would say in that Ben McDonald, Messina sort of, you think he's going to be here 4, 6, 8 years contract if he's that kind of guy. I don't know what they're going to do with Burns. And Bradish, the no-hitter aside last week, and Kramer, we'll see how his arm is. We went from 6 starters to 4 real quick. If I'm writing my column this week for Mike Elias, the notion that you have – these outfielders, this deep depth in your organization, they're not done with pitching for me. And as much as you're like, get a closer, some would say you can grow a closer, try Suarez. I don't know. I'm making that up. But the starting pitching and where they are now, that means feels very tenuous. And you want to bring up the next prospect, right? And that's cool. And I'll hear Povich, okay. But I also think that there's something for Burns being gone at the end of the year, and that they're not going to pay him, that if you're going to rent in the July period of time, which we're getting there, it's a couple weeks away, we're still going to be a contender, whether it's first place, second place, wherever the Yankees are, finding another starting pitcher who could be your opening day starter next year to go with this, because the Burns thing, you're probably not going to shop in that market. I start to question signability in a lot of ways. Boris clients, fans clamoring that, you know, Mr. Rubenstein's going to sign Gunnar Henderson. Find me the Boris client that doesn't go to market, right? So the notion that any of that money is going to be spent or sunk soon that's for the Rex Barney show. No offense to Rex, whom I love, but I'm not taking phone calls on that all day. I'm taking phone calls on what can we affect right now. And what you can affect right now is to go get last year's Dylan Cease, right? Whoever that is, where, you know, if you can go make a deal, and if that involves Kerstad, if you know, guys that you're not going to use because of their glove, or if that involves any of the current veteran guys we've talked about. And I even brought Mateo's name up, and Luke sort of scoffed at him being trade bait. And I'm like, I don't know. Other teams would like him for the same reason we like him. Glove, runs, put him in, maybe hits a little bit, versatile, whatever. He's played his way into having, like, this weird value to the Orioles. Like, can't deal him. We need him. Well, okay, but if it gets you another starting pitcher, I'm not off the starting pitching thing yet. And again, the relief pitching thing, it's so fleeting. You know, yeah. 1 minute it's Webb, 1 minute it's we're going to give Kimbrel $13 million, and then we're going to regret that. Oh, we don't regret it anymore. He's been okay for 2 weeks. That's relief pitching. But starting pitching, and when guys' arms fall off, and Bradish to me is always like, okay, I like the way it looks now, and we can talk about guys that have made it through this UCL strain without getting surgery, without getting shelved. But I'm also looking like, dude, it's not even June. And if he goes out and throws 103 pitches every other time out, and he adds innings twice a week, and all right, now it's October. He's thrown 150 innings, 160 innings. Like, what are you going to get out of him in October? Or what do you feel like you know you're going to get out of him? Because to me, Luke and I talk about this with Lamar Jackson, and the Ravens can't do anything till January. Like, they're going to be measured. The Orioles are going to be measured like that too. To your point, you've already been like, oh, we don't need to win the division. Okay, fine. What we need to do is win game one in October. Yeah. Whenever game one is, we got to win game one. And if Burns is the guy, that's cool. I'm thinking long-term for the team while they have all of this deep depth, while things are in control, while arbitration, like all of that's going on. You know, this is time to get back into getting another Corbin Burns and one that you might have control of later on. And be willing to take on money, to your point, Mets. You have names out, you know, there's teams out there that are going to be faltering. I'm thinking about starting pitching as much as everybody else is worried about the bullpen.
So I would have loved to have seen what would have happened during the offseason had Rubenstein taken control of the team in, say, October. That would have been very interesting in terms of how they divvied up their assets. Would Dylan Cease be here along with Corbin Burns, for example? Because they felt like they could handle that. He has an extra year where Burns is a free agent at the end of this year. Seems to me Corbin Burns has made it pretty clear he wants to go to free agency, much as you were describing a couple of minutes ago with some of the other guys. So I don't know, no matter how much you offer him, I don't know whether he'd sign at this moment to come back to the Orioles. I'm not ruling out him coming back. If Rubenstein is going to put his money behind his celebrity currently. But it seems to me he's going to go to free agency. So, I mean, I don't know if there's anything you can do about that. I would love to see them. And
well, I know what you could do about that. You could figure out who your opening day starter next year is going to be and fortify everything you need to do in October. And if you're going to spend now, because now's the time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there ain't no tomorrow. There's like, go win because you ain't going to have Burns next year in my mind, at least.
I hear you. And yeah, I mean, look, as much as, and it seems pretty clear to me that Elias wants all of his toys. He does not like to trade his young prospects, but ultimately when they started this, I loved his approach. And as much as I loved Andy McPhail, growing the arms and buying the bats never made sense to me because pitching is a much more difficult thing to develop and a much more fleeting thing to hold on to ultimately through injuries and failure, et cetera. But if you have an abundance of young guys at the offensive positions that you could trade them and bring in pitching because they're just fewer spots. They're more important, but they're fewer spots to fill. And they have done that, but yes, although I think they Elias sees this as a year earlier than he expected, they're here. And how do you get to the World Series when everyone is expecting you to be a contender? And ultimately, you're going to have to move something. And also, look, either you got to bring the guys up or play them or not. And that decision has to be made by next year, at least. But right now, you know you're going to have to move some guys, whether it's your top-tier prospects, to bring in what...
Well, you move them or rot them if they're healthy. I mean, to my point with Mullins being like not very good and Hayes not being healthy, had they all been hitting, I mean, Stowers hit enough to get back up here, and he's getting his lunch money, and Kerstedt can't field enough to probably ever get up here unless somebody really gets hurt or O'Hearn goes in the tank, and O'Hearn's success has screwed them all up.
Right.
Like, I mean, literally.
It really has. Having O'Hearn be the player he's become, I think, has really thrown some – Kerstedt would be here right now if Ryan O'Hearn had hit 240 and hit 8 home runs in 2023. He just would. It's a good problem, but it's a problem for them to figure out. If you're going to sign Ryan O'Hearn to a long-term contract and you believe he's going to continue this way, then, you know, maybe the Kerstedt becomes expendable. But I think everyone believes his bat is for real, and you could be giving away a 260, 40 home run guy, in the long run. We'll see. Look, they're going to have to move something to get something. That's ultimately the truth. It's you have to give up less to get a good bullpen arm. And the thing about going after starting pitching, and I'm not saying I disagree with you because I don't, but it's the same. You could trade for a top tier pitcher tomorrow and he could be on the shelf 2 weeks from now with Tommy John surgery. So
Dean Kramer had no signs of anything. And then all of a sudden he's not in the rotation right now. And I mean, dude, we were cocky too. Yeah, I went away for that Cardinals series. We got 6 starters, Suarez, you know, Cade, who? And now 2 weeks later, it's, you know, Nestor's trying to deal for starting pitching. They'll be talking about that on the streets. I just think you can never have enough of it. I don't want to go all Earl Weaver on you, but I still think one of the real prescriptions here for them, while the availability is there, is to say, let's load up the starters for this year, because you don't have to spend on Henderson. You don't have to buy Rutschman. You don't have to buy anything right now. Buying a pitcher and renting him for 8 weeks and promising a real salary for next year for somebody you want, not Kyle Gibson, better than that, you know? Something that would really elevate everything, so you're not worried about Bradish's arm falling off or wondering whether Means is ever going to come back again.
So you're looking at, you know, teams like the Miami Marlins that are known for having starting pitching, and even though they have a ton of them on the shelf, Lizardo just came off the IL, and he's pitched pretty well since he's come off. If you watch him through June, and he looks like he's back to what he was, he's certainly a target. The White Sox have a guy or two that you might want to look at. There are some teams right now that you could pair up with that are looking for prospects, that are looking for that kind of move that makes sense. There aren't a lot of them because, again, with the new system and the new format, there are a ton of teams that are that are technically in wild card contention that might believe that they could get hot at the right time and make their way in deep into the postseason. We'll see. But yeah, if you're Mike Elias, you have to be making those phone calls and starting to match up right now and determining what you need. Look, Bradish has looked great since he's come back. You're talking about Bradish. Grayson Rodriguez just came off the IL as well. I mean, there's no telling for any of these guys.
Hey, dude, were you at the Nomo no-hitter?
I have never seen a no-hitter in person.
All right, because I had Luke on this week. I was running around New York the day it happened. I was following my phone. I even said to Luke, my friend Stan Jablonski texted me. He was in Chicago, my Dundalk friend. He and his wife, she's a White Sox fan. They were texting me at the game, like the Aparicio facade that sits there with, you know, the name AP. They took selfies. They're sending me pictures. And I'm like, they're sitting there in the seventh inning of a no-hitter. And I'm like, you SOB. And there's only 2,000 people there from what I could tell on TV. You know, I walked out of the one, right? And I walked into the Nieves one. But I've never I've sat through 7 innings. There was an Orioles starter like on Mother's Day that was throwing a no-hitter through 7. I'm trying to think of maybe 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago.
Mike Messina, I was in Camden Yards when Mike Messina took a no-hitter, perfect game against the Indians, the then Indians.
That Friday night game? Yeah.
Yeah, Sandy Alomar broke it up with a single either in the bottom, in the top of the eighth or top of the ninth. I don't remember.
I did the show from Hooters that night. I did not go to the game that night because I had a date with my girlfriend then, Robin. We went on a date and we were at a restaurant. I got up to pee and it was a fifth inning and saw it was a no hitter. I'm like, eat fast. We're going back to the ballpark. We literally were on we were literally on Lombard Street heading toward the stadium, listening to the game when the no hitter was broken up. So I was driving back to the stadium to be there.
I have tickets to the Wilson Alvarez no hitter. Still have them. I was at a wake and didn't go. And when he threw the no hitter on a Sunday afternoon at Memorial Stadium.
Scotty P hit me. Scotty and I have been friends for 30 years. Scotty P hit me back in, it was the 99, whatever year it was. He's like, hey, Bruce is playing Brendan Byrne Arena, not the stadium. He's playing the arena. And this was back on the 99 tour when they kind of put the band back together. And he said, and the Yankees are playing the Expos at like 1 o'clock at Yankee Stadium. You want to go up to Yankee Stadium? We'll go to the game. 4 o'clock game's over. We'll get some dinner. We'll go down and see Bruce. I'm in. Let's do it. Morning of, he didn't text me. It was 1999. He called me, said, I things at the shop. I can't. And we didn't go. And it was the perfect game. So the David Cone perfect game.
Right.
That was the game. So I was supposed to go to that game. I didn't go to that game. I have tickets. I broadcast from Jack Murphy Stadium the day the no-hitter was thrown, and I walked out of it in the third inning. I was in the clubhouse before the game. I did a national radio show from the site for 4 hours on Labor Day, and I didn't see the game. I walked out. So
I was covering the team for you. When Eddie Murray hit his 500th home run, it was
at 3 a.m.
It was a huge rain delay. He had just come off the then DL, and I was tired. I had to go work the next day. And I was like, there's no way he's going to hit this home run tonight. And I really need to go home because I'd been sitting there for like 3 hours at that point. And I left, and then he hit the home run. Yeah. Like midnight or some ridiculous time. And to this day, I never forgive myself for that, but yeah, it the things we just miss seeing, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Like once you're there and you're committed, but the no hitter thing, do you know my Northern Lights story from 2 weeks ago that Jen and I went to like chase the Northern Lights?
I saw it on Facebook, but I don't know the in-depth element.
Yeah, I started
story.
To write about it. I haven't finished it yet because it's not funny enough yet because there hasn't been enough time and distance to make it funny, but it will be funny in the end. And I did have Huckleberry pancakes in Spokane, Washington at 8 a.m. It was lovely in that way. And it was Mother's Day weekend. But yeah, I mean, chasing the Northern Lights, you can't chase a no-hitter. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You just plop down at Comiskey Park, send your buddy from Dundalk a picture, and in the seventh inning, I'm pissed. You know, my son was at the NOMO no-hitter and invited me to the game.
I believe it.
And my son never goes to baseball games, but he was at the NOMO no-hitter. So stranger things have happened, but when that sort of weird thing happens with Bradish, all I think about is – it's never going to happen for me. And maybe it will. Maybe it'll just randomly, the next baseball game I go to, it'll happen.
He was never going to throw a no-hitter. He, as you were saying, right, they're trying to protect his arm. He was approaching 100 pitches before the eighth inning. It was never going to happen. And anybody who's upset that they took him out of the game is not looking at the big picture of a season.
They're playing Strat-O-Matic. Yeah. They're not playing real baseball. Well, you know, Luke didn't even send the text out because he's like, he's not going to finish the game. So
no
Luke
chance.
Said he was going to give it one more inning and say Perez and Bradish combined for 8. But the WNST text server is still out there. It's been around a long, long time. Maybe we're in year 17 of the tech service now. But Alan's been around even longer than that, going back to 1995. Alan has been my baseball. Next year we should do something warm and fuzzy and celebrate 30 years and, you know, go out to the Negro Baseball Hall of Fame Museum or just do something fun. I don't know. Go to a Banana Slugs game down in Savannah or whatever, you know. Do something fun. What do you think?
Let me tell you, boys and girls. Knowing Nestor Aparicio for 30 years is not an easy task. So there should definitely be some reward for that. I'm kidding. It's a joke.
Should I take you to the Field of Dreams thing out in Iowa or something like that or no?
That sounds like fun.
What's on your bucket list? I need to know this because you know I always wanted to do 30 ballparks in 30 days and then I did it. And now I've been to the new Texas Stadium. I haven't been to the Atlanta Stadium yet. I haven't been to that place yet. I almost saw Billy Joel there, but I haven't. Do you have any bucket? I mean, obviously, an Oriole World Series game is that like sort of like the Northern Lights, like that has to happen.
So it doesn't need to be in 30 days, but I would like to get to all 30 ballparks. I have been in the Atlanta ballpark. I've been in all three Atlanta ballparks over the last 30 years. I have been to I've been to All-Star games, division, wild card games, division games. I have not been to a World Series game. I would love it to be an Orioles World Series, but I do want to participate in a World Series game at some point.
It shocks me that one of the hoi polloi in Washington didn't invite you as a non-denominational baseball fan to participate in the grandeur that was Nationals World Series Jason Worth glory.
I'm not telling you that I didn't get offers, but I had just started a new job and was pretty deep in it at the time.
And you didn't want your first World Series game to be a Washington Senators game?
While I love my friends that are Washington Nationals fans, and I'm happy for them that they won a World Series, I'm not sure that would have been the best emotional moment for me.
Were you really happy for them, or were you not happy? Were you a little gel?
Nestor, I'm about to be 52 years old. Okay. I mean, I could appreciate someone else's joy in that moment. If you're asking me, do I think that it long-term it has hurt the Orioles that the Washington Nationals are in Washington? Yes, but there's nothing I can do about that now. And the fact that they're there brings a great amount of joy to people that I love. So I have no problem with that. But I'm not sure I would have.
I don't love any Nationals fans. I hate to, I can't admit that, but I do love some Orioles fans.
I'm just not sure that their World Series would have been the first one I wanted to attend.
I even love some Orioles fans that don't love me, Alan, and I know you know what I'm talking about, So, Alan McCallum is here. He's wearing the ornithologically correct white panel. I would call that a rare bird, is what I would call that. You would call that a batting practice hat.
It is the Orioles' official batting practice hat for 2024. In other words, that's another piece of merch because it's a hat you don't have, so go out and buy it, and I did.
Yeah, I've been wearing my – I had a visor that was the 1973 Oriole bird, just the plain orange cartoon bird on a plain black hat that was – more of a Rich Coggins, Al Bunbury, 73, 74, Sergio Robles. I did get asked. I did Reverend Al Hathaway and Martin Knott's podcast. It's called He's Holy. That's the Reverend. I'm Not with a K. That's Martin Knott. So He's Holy, I'm Not is the name of the podcast. You want to watch it. And they both have been guests on my show over the course of time through years in politics and this and that. And Reverend Al's always been just a good man trying to make the city better. Also got a mean golf game. He does. He looks a little bit like Samuel Jackson, but he's got the soul of Lenny Moore. So I was doing their podcast in Vegas last week, which we're going to air this week. The minute Martin sends it over to me, I'm going to get it on the air because it had my favorite subject in it. Me, I was the guest, not the host. So they asked me on the spot, Reverend's like, who's your favorite Oriole of all time? And I'm like, Alan Mills. I just said Alan Mills. This is popped out.
Wow.
And so I didn't know like what to say. I was going to say Sergio Robles or Tom Chopay, but I didn't think that would be funny. I love Mike Boddicker. I mean, Renicky was always my favorite Oriole of that era. I would say lifetime achievement, Mike Flanagan, through my relationship and the depth of the relationship that I have with Mike. Jim Palmer's the greatest Oriole, but you know what I mean? But I said Alan Mills. So if I say to you, who's your all-time favorite Oriole? Who's your all-time favorite Oriole?
Well, Alan Mills ranks up there. Alan Mills is a really, really good dude. Cal Ripken is the greatest Oriole of my experience, having watched and covered the team. My favorite Oriole.
And you loved covering Cal. Cal was all that in a bag of donuts for you to cover. Cal was good to you. You were good to Cal. You know, like Cal, and Cal was in demand when you covered the team. Like when you first came on, I probably took you over to the locker and said, Cal Allen, try to be nice to him despite me and your brother.
Absolutely. Chris, I can give you a top three or five. Chris Hoyle, Mike Devereaux, Brian Roberts. I'll tell you what is I know Gunner and Adley are the faces of the team. I really love Jordan Westberg. I love the way the kid plays. I love the way he takes at bats. I love that he's serious on the field. He's a grinder. I love everything I've seen about this kid. So I love
O'Hearn. I always say to my wife, he's the first round draft pick. They quit on him and his potential, and the Orioles. This is the real tribute to the organization are guys like that, that they made better. And I love guys that can make themselves better, you know, after they've been beaten around and devalued to some degree.
You know, and they've done a really good job of that. Felix Bautista's like that. I mean, they've found a lot of, you know, unpolished diamonds that they've cleaned up. You know, it gets a little frustrating when you see kid like the kid that came in that they just traded for walking four guys and
Kiera,
looking like he has absolutely no idea. You know, people are thinking, hey, we're trying to win the World Series right now. No more projects, but. Cano and Bautista and O'Hearn, you know, they're in that position because they made some projects work.
They tried to make Fuji a project last. I mean, you know, I've been saying there's going to be a Fuji in this Vieira. I mean, they're going to keep trying, and that's what ball clubs do, right? That's what they're going to be doing the rest of the way.
Yeah. So I would tell you, Alan Mills, Chris Hoyles.
Devereaux, you gave me Devereaux. You gave me Brian Roberts. You got any more?
I love Joe Orsolak. Loved Joe Orsolak. The everyman. I loved Randy Milligan. You know, those guys from the 89 team were really special to me.
You're the second guy that gave me Moose Milligan this week. How about that?
So this was at 95. It wasn't the – no, I'm wrong. It was the year, was it 91? It was the year the Twins won the World Series. And Randy Milligan broke their 15 game winning streak with a hit in the ninth inning to win the game. But before that, they had lost a game. It was, you know, they were in the middle of a horrible season. And I was a kid and we pulled up to the gas station after the baseball game and there's Randy Milligan. And I had my glove and I said, you know, can I go out? My parents were like, go out. So I went out and I, you know, asked him for an autograph. Mr. Milligan, would you sign the autograph? You know, and I said, we just came from the game and they lost horribly. And he goes, oh, sorry about that. just a really sweet guy.
You had your moment with the Moose, did you?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a great picture of him taking the first pitch.
Yeah.
You know, down when it was all dirt.
Just the Bromo Seltzer Tower out in the distance to swing for.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I know the walls. If Bill Stecky is listening, I want Moose Milligan on the show. Give me his text number. I like having Oriole legends on the program, and they like coming on because we know things around here. Like, worshiping Randy Milligan. You know, it's always, how can you remember this 33 years ago and I can't remember what I had for dinner last night?
Oh, there are things that are in my memory from 1989 and 1991. What was there yesterday is long gone. I will also give you Nick Markakis. I thought Nick Markakis was as consummate a professional ball player as you could ask for. And I loved the way he played.
Well, I hope that you get to a World Series game involving the Baltimore Orioles before I get to the Northern Lights, because you know how much I love you and I care more for my friends than I even do myself at this point. My Northern Lights adventure will take on its own life when it's meant to be. It's not meant to be yet. As the Orioles World Series is not meant to be yet, but I believe the time is coming. You know, I believe you will. I don't know if I'll see the Northern Light. I'm going to try. But I do feel like the Orioles are going to play in a World Series game. I do believe
I'm not sure it's going to be 24. I think there's still a lot of things that they're fleshing out right now. But I think 25.
Oh, come on. Don't be playing that next year crap. It's only May. Stop. They're going to win this year. Have a little faith. There's magic in the night.
I'm not ruling it out.
But hey, you're all right. You know?
I'm just trying to be realistic about how things happen.
Oh, God. Stop setting your bar lower than a world championship here for Mr. Rubenstein. We're under new ownership here. My media pass is under double secret probation review. Trust me. So I know this. Alan, I appreciate you. When I get my press pass back, I'll let them know that you don't have one either. There was real consternation about me being Venezuelan. I will say that. So the fact that I brought up that they're keeping the only Venezuelan in the media out, there was major pushback against that in some way. And I said, is that not true? So.
Well, it's been a little while since I've needed a press pass for the field, but hey, I have my.
You're doing hot dogs up in the stands now, just pretty well, right?
I am. Look, other people have football and basketball and hockey and keep their sports fandom diversified. Baseball and tennis are my true love sports, but nothing else compares to baseball. So whether if you said, hey, I need you for a pinch to cover the team, I mean, I'd certainly be happy to do it again. But
they would be blessed to have you in that locker room, Alan McCallum. I mean that. They would be blessed to have you talking about covering Cal Ripken and Alan Mills and Mike Devereaux. And the 30 years later, you mentioned those guys because those guys were good to you when you were there and you knew them a little bit. And look, right.
I was very proud to cover the team. I was very proud to do it for WNST. I loved – nothing made me feel more like I had arrived than getting to vote for the most valuable Oriole officially during those years. There's something really special about that for me.
By the way, Luke presents the most valuable Raven, right? Like every year he presents that award, right?
Incredible.
So for our organization, we take that seriously, you know,
absolutely.
And I think the 25th anniversary documentary would speak to the seriousness with which we covered news here and information and the things that I allowed and didn't allow on this airwaves.
And Luke does an amazing job with everything he does for you and WNST. And Baltimore Positive.
Oh, I would say from your perspective, you have to be proud as punch that we continue to kick ass,
no question.
Way that Tom Kapp said it with you and Howard and everybody that did this job, but Luke's been doing it a long time.
No question. I'm honored to watch the work that he does on a regular basis.
If we get a second seat in the press box for WNST at the World Series, I want you to have it. I will sit out on the ledge over at the hotel across the street with my feet out. So sitting there drinking cheap beer like I did in Inglewood last week. Alan McCallum is here. He is he's still fun. He still knows baseball. He just doesn't come on as often. But when we do, we wind up like going at it for an hour. So I love Alan. You don't have to find him on the internet. Leave him alone. He's running things in D.C., but he's got a cool hat. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, trying to get back to first place and doing our best. Stay with us.